The Hello Careers podcast explores a system developed to align business needs with education and training. It's proven to be invaluable for dozens of businesses and people looking to create a new life for themselves. We are firm believers that you must screen for attitude and train for aptitude. We're unpacking our insight to help you build partnerships and earn public support for an age-old way of learning a skill, apprenticeship. We'll address issues such as, where there's a skills gap, is there an education and training gap? How do you respond to a tight labor market? What happens when the major employer pulls out of your community? If you're looking to create an apprenticeship program or curious about what to do next, this show could be just the thing you've been looking for. I'm your host, Mark Sylvester. Now, let's get started and talk with the team. Well, welcome back to the show. Today, we've got a great conversation lined up for you. I'm going to welcome back Michael Specchierla, who is the Executive Director of Slow Partners, and Dan Weeks, who's the business liaison for Slow Partners. You've heard them on our other shows. And today we've brought in a guest because we want to talk to businesses. We have Ty Safrino, who's the CEO and CTO of Trust Automation, based here.
Yep.
And Ty, I'm just curious, how did you get to know these guys? What happened here?
I think fortunately, you know, there's the fortunate and unfortunate aspects of a small community. And the fortunate aspect is you can't help but run into other folks that are trying to make the place better.
And part of the secret sauce of all this is the partnerships, right?
Yes,
and that's what we're talking about. So how did they pitch that partner? I'm curious, it was Dan, I'm guessing it was you. And what was that sentence that you went, tell me more about that. That sounds interesting.
With Dan, it's more of an arm wrestling. So you know, once you try to get your face off the table, and you know, in seriousness, I've known Dan for a while. And when he approached me with the concept and the idea that, hey, you know, apprenticeships can be alive and well, there is an avenue and a path for people to get out of where they are and stuck where they are and move forward. And he basically broke down their process and then the importance that business plays into it for the latter stages of it. It made sense. It's basically something that's been missing for a very long time, I think, with this push that everyone has to go to a 4-year and then maybe even a few years after that and things of that nature. And that's, in my personal opinion, some people are set up for that, but you can't say everyone has to go do that. It doesn't make sense.
Well, I think that's the obvious success of this is we're getting ready to go in our second cohort and we're continuing to grow the program. What's interesting to me is your business didn't feel like an obvious fit for me, right? With automation and manufacturing. Tell us how you saw the fit.
So there is one of the things that Dan had known about us is that we had a fairly high software content and that we go through and we are, we 100% test everything that we build. So, you know, is a minor background, Trust has two pieces, Trust Automation, the company. It's got a engineering services piece that's a original founding piece of 28 years, and it has a manufacturing component where the things that we do in engineering services, you know, hopefully roll into where we build them later on for customers. When Dan approached me, it's like, hey, we have a batch of kids who are going through an intensive software training program. Is that something in the test area that would make sense for you guys? And actually, the timing was perfect for a program that we were in the middle of. And we were able to have a few of the apprentice take a look at us and were interested in us and found one that was a good fit. And we're able to roll them in. But it really was really good timing and a good message that has been a message that we've been discussing internally as we try to find people for really very high technical skill jobs that are not engineering jobs, but that are actually hands-on working, doing jobs on the manufacturing floor.
It's those other pieces that fill in, right?
Right, exactly.
So Dan, we've talked in the show about the importance of this listening and discovery, right? And that you and Michael, you did a lot of meetings with people to listen and figure out. What were you listening for when you had that first conversation with Ty?
I think what I needed to understand from Ty is this isn't a traditional coding job. This isn't a traditional, I'm going to test a mobile app so it'll work. And as Ty was talking, he wasn't using the term software tester, but there was a software component and a hardware component to it. And when Ty's team pitched to our apprentices, they passed around a PC board. And most of the people in the class go, oh. And the people who had the hybrid skills, the electrical and the mechanical, goes, that's where I want to work. Because it resonated with their background. It wasn't the traditional, I'm going to test a mobile app, but it was a perfect fit for someone who wants to tie in what their experiences are and what their interests are before they took their software testing training.
Now, I like what you said, when Ty's team pitched to the apprentices,
right?
That's a flip. Right. Normally, I would think it's the person wanting the job, pitching the job, but you pitch to them. Now, we know through previous episodes that part of the success of the program is that you are integrated, Ty, you're integrated early in the process.
Right.
Tell me what that was like.
It was, I mean, it starts with, you know, for us, it started with Dan coming in saying, we've got this class coming. Is there of interest for you? And then it started a discussion between the two of us of, okay, if I needed some folks, where would we see those going? What are the skill sets that we'd be looking for? What are the different types of things that they'd be working on? And we are, you know, when you, I think, look at the manufacturing cross-sector versus like knowledge and innovation, other more software-only centric, we have this wide, you know, variety of mechanical skills, electrical skills, software skills, really system debugging skills that are needed. And so certain people don't like that, but for the people that it resonates with, it makes a lot of sense. That's the things I think that Dan saw and then started identifying who in the class may like that, and is there things in the class that they could tweak slightly from what they were doing to emphasize that, hey, this might be an option for those that hadn't considered it.
Well, that says the attitude aptitude thing, right? We're looking for the right attitude.
Yes, and it really has to speak to the diversity in tech that's needed. It's more than just gender diversity. It's also that diversity of perspective. And I think that's where those hybrid skills come in, that you can value a background in a different subject area or knowledge base and then apply it to a new discipline.
So that's interesting because we're talking about worlds colliding here, right? So what do you look for in the student to try to uncover or discover where some possible collaborative backgrounds could come together?
Well, I think you want sort of that Renaissance person, you know, the jack of all trades, master of none, because it gives them that broad background that you're looking for a T-shaped individual, not just an I-shaped where they're just a silo, but a T that goes broad.
This is news. Tell me a T-shaped.
Well, think about it. The broad, not just the vertical line, but also the horizontal line up top that shows breadth and depth. I think that speaks to a relentless learner, someone who's curious and really wants to explore and is willing to learn and relearn as needed.
I think in our field, that's a great analogy. In our field, rarely, when you have difficult problems to solve as you're building something, rarely is it an obvious problem. It requires that diverse skill set. It requires an understanding of mechanics, not to the level where you're going to design an aircraft, but understanding the basic principles. It requires understanding some electrical and understanding some software to get to the bottom of it. Because oftentimes the path, the clues to what's wrong is sprinkled amongst a bunch of different things.
In this pitching to the apprentices, one of the other secrets to this is there's a journeyman at the business who's attached to the apprentice. How did you?
We might be a failure there. We have this deep pool type philosophy where you throw you in, and if you can swim, life is good.
Tell him what you did with Matthew just to see what he was able to do, because I think that was key.
It may not be our shining moment. So really, we dropped them in amongst the team. There is some senior people that are there to help them, but from the beginning, they're expected to ask questions, be thoughtful, not be scared or timid about what they're involved in. And you know, one of our talks that we give to people is, you know, don't be afraid of making mistakes. You know, everyone makes mistakes. The key is to learn and learn rapidly, and start to be the person that you ask less questions. But at the beginning, that's what's expected. It's expected to ask questions. It's expected to for us to push on you and find out where your comfort level is and where your skills are, and then to start to adapt and adjust those skills as time goes on.
Well, that speaks to the culture, right? The culture of your organization, because I would think that here's a person who's coming off of a different career. There's probably some anxiety around, okay, now I'm doing this new thing. I want to do well. I've gotten the training. Now it's, you know, it's live fire, so to speak. And mm-hmm. and to your point, I am in the deep end and I don't want to flail, but it's okay if you go under one,
right.
two. There's going to be someone who has your back. How do you, are you sensitive to that anxiety that they have?
We are. You know, hopefully not uniquely and not trying to toot our own horn, but we're a pretty easygoing group when it comes to the beginning. And actually really through everyone's whole career. That's why we have people that stay so long with us.
How long?
You know, we lose very few people per year.
Okay.
So, you know, the norm is 10 to 14%. I think we run in the 2 or 3%.
Oh, that's commendable.
Really, you know, of course they're nervous. But when people are smiling, when people are pulling you over, when people are asking you to do simple things at first, and then as you show aptitude, asking you to do more and more difficult things, that's how you get people comfortable with it. But, you know, sitting down in front of a computer, doing 3 weeks of training and going through that, that's just not our approach or style. Not that that wouldn't be fantastic, but it all, always seems like we're a long ways behind what we want to do. And it's like, well, we really need you out on the floor to go help with stuff.
So what's the onboarding time before, from the time they walk in the door and now it's like, okay, they have some specific knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. That you were a part of actually. And now they're going to get even more specific. How long is it that onboarding before they're, you know, adding value?
Ideally about 5 minutes. And then, and in reality, it's typically less than a day before they're out there starting to do things.
So students who are listening to this, pay attention to that, that's exactly the reality of what this is like. You've got that amount of time, you're with your cohort learning, but then when you get dropped into the environment, you're going to be expected to perform right off the bat.
Yeah. And it's not like, you know what, if you can't do this, you go away. It's about figuring out where their comfort level is.
Yep.
And I think the interns that resonated with us and we with them were the ones that have that natural curiosity and excitement to learn. I've been at this 28 years, and if a couple of days goes by where I don't learn something new, you know, that's a bad week. So it's all about that.
What's interesting, Mark, is if you talk to the apprentice he's speaking of, he loved the fact that he was pushed to show what he could do.
Mm.
Because if Ty had this approach, I'm just going to give you easy work because you don't have a four-year degree, it would have been much different. He actually loved the fact that he was able to show what he could do. And that was great is when Ty was at a meeting with Ty, with our congressman, talking to other manufacturing firms. And Ty was saying what a great experience it was to put someone through the paces and for them to come with flying colors.
Yeah. And the apprentice bragged in the same way back that he loved
really?
Being
yes.
pushed and really tested on just how clever are you? What is the depth of your experience that you can apply to all this? He loved the range of experiences that he's
because it's not charity. And it right. was on both
exactly.
sides. It's like, this isn't charity. This is a great synergistic match.
Right. And it was, you know, on the finance side, you know, you're always looking at, you know, value and return. And one of the things that was used with this from a convincing standpoint is this is a new program. They're making it very easy as a manufacturer to get our feet wet and try this out. But if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. It's a, let's see how it goes. I mean, it goes to the point now with this one intern. It's like, man, he's part of the team. It's like, you know, I don't think of him as an intern. He's one of the crew. And that's, you know, the best that you could hope for. And it happened very rapidly.
He's better than an intern. He's an apprentice.
Yes, that's true. an apprentice. Sorry.
So the purpose of this particular program is that a business owner like yourself, a leader in a company, is trying to determine, do I want to get into this? Mm-hmm. Right. That's why we're talking with you. And you said something that got me thinking. You said, from a convincing standpoint, which suggests that as good as these two guys think this program is, and they take you and ply you with coffee, and as you said, Dan just wrestles you down on this, you still need to leave that conversation and go to your C-suite and talk to your team and say, this is a really good idea. Then you've got to then communicate to them. What convinced them that this was, they would give, let's go do this, Ty. Let's give it a shot.
It was, and this was a conversation that went on. It wasn't.
Oh, sure.
It came down to the financial safety net that was provided by the program. So if you look at the stages that go on, it's, when we hire people, in general hiring, we kind of look at them as we're hiring you for life. It's not for a project. It's not to dispose. So this provided that safety cushion of, we can be a little less sure because the apprentice doesn't have all the skills that we'd normally be looking for. And if it doesn't work out, we're not going to feel like we've destroyed someone's life because we've let them go. There is this whole other safety net behind them to help them figure out where they fit. So it made that transition and that risk or that benefit of doing it easy and pretty guilt-free, in essence.
That path from the first time the team pitched the apprentices, and there was several of them, and then Matthew somehow, he's like, okay, that might be our guy. And I know that there are different touch points through the training where you're still involved before they come to you. So whereas a normal hire, you might have 2, 3, 4, 5, I'm not sure if you're recruiting or your interviewing process, but they talk to a lot of people.
Yes, they do.
You had a chance to see him perform, and get checkpoints along the way. So it wasn't like he was an unknown quantity.
Exactly. It's like a hands-on interview process that lasts for, how many weeks was it? It was
quite a few.
Yeah, it was a lot of weeks. And I think that's that safety cushion. So, normally we go through a pretty extensive interview process. It ends with the three C-suite folks, and we talk to everybody. And then you cross your fingers.
Yeah, of course, of course.
And this is a very different approach. This is, you go through the process, everyone looks at them, you do the same set, and then it's like, and then the interview begins. And that interview lasts, many, many weeks. And at the end of it, or during the course of it, you can raise your hand and go, this is not working. This is not the right person. Or you go, this person's fantastic. And that changes everything.
My favorite line, when I've got the candidate there, I'm the last interview. And imagine, visualize, I'm sitting here, the candidate's facing me, and the team who has just interviewed them is sitting back behind the glass wall, hoping this last meeting goes well. Because they love this person. And then I look at them and I'm looking at the paper and I just look at them with a lot of certainty. And I said, I'm just not feeling it. And they're like, what? Were you not paying attention? I'm the guy. Look at what value I'm going to bring to the company. And that's the answer I want. Or they said, well, I guess thank you very much. Because I think that last test is ego strength. To figure out how are they going to work in that company and be able to hold their own. And I appreciate that you don't treat them like a second-class hire. I mean, that you're in this. I also appreciate when you said we hire for life, because this program is changing lives. That's the point. That's one of the outcomes that they want, is we're taking people in and making a fundamental difference in head of household's life. Right, that they're going to go out and fundamentally change the community. Let me just go back to why we're doing this thing in the first place. Is let's figure it out over the next couple of years, and then let's figure out how to train thousands of people. Right, and work them into the workforce. Tell me about, to that point, over the next 3 to 4 years, because we're just getting started on this, what, where do you see this program working with you in terms of filling spots? Is it just another one or two or possibly more?
No, possibly a lot more.
A lot more.
Yeah, I mean, this last year, you know, the last 12 months, we've probably hired 40 people.
Wow.
All across the spectrum.
Yep.
I think we have 10 or 12 recs out right now, and there's no slowing down for what we're going to need. I think in many companies, you hit places where you hit your stride and you figure out, you know, really where you're doing well. You know, it took us 28 years to figure that out.
And it's
a little bit tongue in cheek, but it is the case where we've gotten big enough as a company where you're no longer a risk to a very large company to do business with. And that's, you know, it is a, you know, no one will talk about it per se, but that is a reality. Where they have to look at their supply chain, they have to look at what's going to keep it consistent and running. And if you're too small of a company and you can have financial or economic or whatever hiccups, that's a risk to them. We're past that stage. It occurred a few years ago. So we're in a nice growth stage now. Where I see this playing in is in the Central Coast, manufacturing, advanced manufacturing, you know, precision manufacturing, which is what we do. It's not about sitting at a station and putting a screw in all day long or four screws all day long and then moving the piece down to someone else. This is, you know, working in teams, working from start to finish on projects. It's a lot of skills. You don't just put screws in. And granted, there's plenty of screws that go in, but that's after a whole lot of other work doing other things to make sure something works, be it testing, be it electrical tests, be it you know, talking with manufacturing engineering and going, you know, I've been doing this for 2 weeks now and I really hate this step. I think we should do these things instead because it'll make it easier. It is that approach where the smartest people about the products we make are the people on the floor building them. The rest of us did the best job we could, but we need that feedback on a day-to-day basis because we're not there. We're off solving the next problem to make the product either better or more robust or take the feedback that was given and convert it into something that makes it easier for someone to work with. So when you look at what the apprenticeship program provides and you look at this broad spectrum of skills that they're trying to instill upon a body, that's what's needed here. There's a gap missing, and that gap missing is people, in my opinion, who like to build things. And it's it doesn't have to be everything. It could be just aspects of it, but it very rarely, for what we need, is you like to build things, but you're only going to build this little thing every day for the rest of your life. It's like, no, you know, you're going to be doing this week, and next week you're going to be doing that, and this following week you're going to be doing this other thing. And all of those skills that you bring to the table allow you to grow inside of our organization and get more responsibility, be in charge of other people eventually, and, you know, have a career that expands and grows.
I want to go back to, you said another key word, feedback. Part of the hallmark of the success of this program is listening. It started with listening. You guys went out, you know, Michael, Dan, you went and talked to the business community and figured out what they needed, and then you tailored the program to meet that. You just said something really interesting, Ty. With this process of building things and improving and continuous and never-ending improvement, that there's a feedback loop for you inside the company, and that's how you get better. What's the feedback loop back to the program so they know what you need or what you're looking for to help grow them? Again, I'm thinking the next cohort, cohort. What's that look like?
That's an open communication, and I think, to be completely fair, something that we haven't done a very good job of. But it involves that, Dan, Mike, understanding what it is that we need, where we're changing, where we're evolving as a company, where we're going to, so that we have the right resources, which are the apprentice, in place coming out when we need them. And, you know, I think that's the Achilles heel of the Advanced Manufacturing Group in the San Luis Obispo County, is our visibility to other people in the county is quite poor. We all, you know, rarely do we sell stuff inside the county. It's not where our customer base is. We stay quiet. We're traveling all the time. we're doing the things that we do and the rest of the world moves on around us and we whine when something changes that we don't like. We have to get out in front of it. We have to be part of what's going on. And part of that is also making sure that in a situation like this, that we have the follow-up meetings, we talk about what our forecasts are, where we're headed, and what kind of skills we need.
The lesson we learned when we launched the first tech cohort, we were really focused more on software and IT companies. We stumbled upon advanced manufacturing, precision manufacturing with trust automation and Ty's need for software testing. That caused us to actually apply for, and we received a second grant focused specifically on precision manufacturing, advanced manufacturing. So that feedback loop of how we start that off, that's really where we're at right now, that this conversation here of unpacking what are the skills that, you know, an apprentice in a precision manufacturing company would have, and how does that tie into what we've already figured out with IT and software testing. So yeah. We've got another grant to figure this out.
No, it's good. It's fantastic. I mean, I think, you know, to kind of paint a picture of what the one apprentice is working on as an example, so that people get kind of an image of the advanced manufacturing, is he can, in any given day, he can bounce around from, you know, testing fairly complex high voltage circuit boards to working in a clean room, building an ultra high vacuum robot that is going into semiconductor manufacturing equipment to make computer chips. Working on an electronics box design that's got, you know, 24 of Intel's highest performance processors in it, 10 gigabit fiber links between all the peripherals, lots of FPGAs, which are math machines, all packaged in a container that's as small as possible that wants to overheat as much as it possibly can whenever, that's intended to go, you know, to the hottest places in the world and survive in any environment. So, I mean, you look at where he bounces around in any given moment, and it is that wide, diverse skill set and that, you know, open-minded, very excited about doing something new each day.
I think the key thing from our first cohort is we were able to place a software testing person in precision manufacturing. That experience, like Michael said, led us to apply for a new grant. And now we're going to say, if you could start with a blank sheet of paper, Ty, what kind of people would you want? That's what we're just starting the customer discovery process to ask people like you, in 3 years, what do you wish you had?
Right.
We're just starting this, but it will be tuned to what you need as opposed to, I got some people that might not be a great fit, but maybe. We're going to start the other way of, what do you wish you had?
Yep. And we're looking forward to that.
And your industry is being disrupted massively.
Yes and no. I would say a lot of the disruption that everyone is seeing is that they're figuring out that this has been going on a long time here and that we're here. So, you know, 5 years ago, you go to San Luis Obispo and you ask the question, you know, are there a bunch of manufacturers here? And everyone would go, no. You know, 6 months ago, you go and you go, is there a bunch of manufacturers here? And there's maybe, oh, there's a few. But the reality is the numbers have grown and there's hundreds of them here. It's just we are horrible at raising our hands and saying, look at me, we're here. We focus, you know, externally again. So the change is this change where it's high value. And it's going from doing simple things, which you can't cost effectively do in California and it's hard to do in the United States anymore, to how do we add the value? How do we use people that, you know, use the skills that make people unique, which is our brain and problem solving, and let the other mundane stuff, let machines do it. And so from that standpoint, there is a renaissance, you know, in essence happening, but it's really for the Central Coast, it's been the way it's been all along because, you know, we're probably one of the leaders in, if you're not doing something that's high value, you can't be here. It just doesn't make any sense to pencil it. You need to be somewhere else. And we've lost businesses because of that in this local area on a regular basis. When their stuff becomes mundane, they have to move somewhere else.
And as we look to be more competitive as a nation as well, the word precision is the key word, right? Because we can outsource jobs to, you know, offshore those jobs, right? Mm-hmm. And fine. Okay, good. We lost those because the precision work we can do. I want to switch over to the software side for a second because I know AI is massively changing automation in a big way. And I'm wondering if that's impacting your engineering services piece, and if so, is there an opportunity?
For me, and I may be not as close to this as I should be, but I'm still waiting to see what the killer app is. It's there's a lot of interesting big data AI mining that's cool, but that's I don't think the long term hope of what is out there. So when it comes to big data, when it comes to collecting information, when it comes to getting to the root of how to perform and how to improve, there's some really interesting tools in the AI side for that that are being developed. When it comes to helping the engineering process, helping the manufacturing process by making it easier to adapt or change lines, we're still waiting to see that. Now, there's great simulation tools. Those aren't really AI tools. Those
Correct.
Are simulation
Correct.
Tools.
Yeah. Where are you guys on prototyping? How much of that do you do?
Daily, hourly, every minute. we have over 20 engineers. It's, 20% approximately of our workforce that is, in essence, building the first stubs all the time. And, at any given moment, I think we have 6 or 7 different programs that stretch from electronic warfare systems to fan controllers for, rapid cook ovens to, radar platforms for the Department of Defense, the semiconductor equipment. So we are a heavy prototype environment. And when you look at a lot of the manufacturers in our region, that's how they survive, is staying ahead of the curve, staying to where it's not a commodity item. As soon as something becomes commoditized, we start to back away from it as a business personally, because it becomes very hard to be, competitive with people overseas and in other regions of the U.S. When it comes to the new things, the things that people haven't figured out, that's where we can shine. And I think from our region area, that's where the region shines really well.
Yeah, I'm thinking of this region specifically as a competitive advantage. And I know that there's a huge effort with the EDC, or the EVC, and these groups coming together, which is kind of what this whole show is about. Like, how do we come together as a community to figure out to use and leverage the resources we have to fill this gap that's going to happen economically to us in mm-hmm. the upcoming years? And it sounds like we're well on the path to that.
I think it is a very big problem that we have approaching us. It's a problem which existed prior to the closure of Diablo Canyon being announced. We were underperforming in a lot of the metrics in this area. You have to say it. I mean, we have a high desirability from a retirement community standpoint, and that doesn't make a balanced community. So there is now a very urgent, visible problem that's brought the spotlight to this. And to get out of it, it's not just advanced manufacturing. It's finding the right places to have the best impact in the region that allow people to keep the region strong and healthy and diverse in the place that we love. Being extremely biased, yeah, I think advanced manufacturing has got a lot of the answers there. But yeah, that's a extremely biased position coming from me.
And the people that are listening to the show are not just here. I mean, the goal of this show is to take and put this apprenticeship program in all the other counties of California, if not the rest of the nation. So everyone's going to have their own economic development challenge. And this whole idea of building partnerships, public partnerships, private partnerships, educational partnerships with the business community is how it works. So we just have great examples of it working right now. As a business owner, and you're talking to another business owner, what would the advice be you'd give to them to kind of maybe open? You're obviously an early adopter, you're in the early adopter business. So it's hard to not be that guy. But someone who's maybe an early majority or a laggard, what would you say to them in terms of opening their mind to this concept?
Everybody is looking for good people.
There you go.
I mean, fundamentally, you can't be, you don't open a business and go, I really hope I get all the lousy ones. everybody is looking for good people. There's risk, though, involved. There's financial risk. And typically the financial risk is if someone is really good, you don't mind paying the cost of it. But if you hire someone and you don't know yet, then that's a risk that is kind of scary. So really it comes down to, this is a very low risk way of finding really good people. And that to me is fundamental to why you would say yes and try it.
One of the things, Ty, you have like over 100 employees, don't you?
Yeah, we do.
So typically for a company that size, HR can be a challenge because it's new and different. What helped here is Ty had me talk direct. He has a very experienced HR, but the CEO said, let's make it work.
Right.
As opposed to going straight to HR, that's a different conversation. Because from HR, it's like, oh, there's new paperwork. This is a different environment. But the alignment was at the CEO's level. And then it's like HR says, we'll make that happen.
It's a strategic decision.
Yes.
That's right. Key.
Right. That's because you're this is new. I mean, it's apprentices have been around forever. We know that. But this concept is new. So it takes some leadership who's willing to take
Ty's
a chance.
Ty's using another one of the people we talked with, Amy Cardell from Clever Duck. She used pooled risk. I think Ty's saying the same thing because part of what we did, if you weren't happy, you could bring them back to us.
Right.
And we'll put them back in the pool. He never needed to, but he knew he could put the person through the paces to say, how confident on a scale of 1 to 10 that this person's great.
Right.
And you were able to do that.
And so in essence, you're able to lower what your initial impression is or what you think the risk is. And say, I'm not just going to, if someone's a 9 or a 10, we take them. If they're anything less, we're not going to worry about it. These are early on folks. They haven't blossomed. We don't know where they hit on the scale. So, yeah, the fact that they're in the program, this apprenticeship program, means that they're above a tremendous amount of other people. So now it's about any of these folks that make it. We got to give them a shot. Because
is it 29 out of 900 or some number like that?
A ridiculous number.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So, and we call them the high potentials, right? Yes. In a larger company, that's the high potential. Those are the ones where you know they're not there yet, but we're investing in them over the long haul.
The term we use that I like is our typical apprentice was an underemployed overachiever.
Yeah. I like that. Ty, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and for other business owners to listen to that, you know, the concrete examples. I appreciate you taking a risk with the program. Now, Michael, if someone who's listening right now is, oh, that sounds great. I would love to have a conversation with you guys either to be a part of the program or to institute this business listening, if you will, this business speaks piece. How would they do that?
Oh, you can just go to hellocareers.org or you can go to slowpartners.org. Reach out to us, info@slowpartners.org. We'd love to help you.
And Dan, if someone is at the county level is trying to figure out how do I build that connection to the business community, can they contact you?
Yes, dweeks@slowcoe.org.
Perfect. You guys, thank you so much. I appreciate the conversation.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. How will you bring this system to your community and say hello to new careers and goodbye to low-wage jobs? For more episodes, visit hellocareers.org or send us a note to podcast@hellocareers.org. We'd love to hear from you with questions or success stories of how apprenticeship is working in your region. Till next time, I'm Mark Sylvester with Hello Careers.